friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network USA. Delighted to welcome somebody indeed I can refer to as a friend. We have rules around this place, as I would know, with Anya Sheridan as executive producer. And one of them is, of course, that ministers, government representatives of Ireland, and particularly friends, it's not how many times they visit us when they're in New York, it's we're waiting for the one time that they don't. So, Minister for Justice and Equality, Charlie Flanagan, perfect record so far.
Adrian, hi, thank you very much for having me on your show, and can I congratulate you on its importance here in New York. I've been over here for the St. Patrick's Day festivities, the highlight of which were the two parades. The iconic and famous 257th parade in Manhattan.
258
as was. Yeah, what's another one? And also the very fine parade in Brooklyn, which I visited for the first time, well organized by Mary Hogan.
Yes. Ireland does put its best foot forward with government representation, for the St. Pat, not just the St. Patrick's Day parade and the St. Patrick's Day itself, St. Patrick's weekend, and as we've talked about over the last 25 years, the significance of this month of Irish history, heritage, culture, is really a great and amazing opportunity, for the Irish government, for Irish people, for Irish Americans, to actually, show the best of what we have, and remind people that the contribution to America of the Irish
story told. And retold and retold again, but particularly around the St. Patrick's Day period, small island on the periphery of Europe, 6 million people currently living there, and an international worldwide diaspora of almost 70 million people, 33 million of whom are here in the United States, people who claim Irish descent. And in this great city of New York, in excess of 3 million people. So I believe it's important that as government ministers that we ensure that that level of connection is maintained and that we acknowledge the contribution of our diaspora to the homeland. Yeah. And that's why I'm here. I'm here to thank people for their engagement with Ireland, and I'm here to acknowledge the extraordinary special relationship between New York City and Ireland.
Obviously, we, on our side of the Atlantic, we are, I don't know a better word than nervous about Brexit. And the threat of what can go wrong. And we're not, sometimes it's an overabundance of caution, but this is real, and nobody would know better than yourself.
Absolutely
Brexit
right.
In Ireland.
You're absolutely right. The last time we spoke, we were coming to the end of what was a very acute international financial crisis that had the effect of almost devastating the Irish economy. We got over the challenge. And I suppose the history of Ireland over the generations has been one of challenge and crisis and challenge and crisis. But the Irish people continue to show great resilience. Yeah. And now the challenge we have, our economy having recovered because of government policy in recent years, we are now faced with the challenge of Brexit. And this was a challenge that nobody wanted. But we acknowledge that the UK people have voted to leave the European Union, and that's going to happen. But there are specific and special and unique circumstances on the island of Ireland, which is what you speak of. And I am concerned that heightening tensions, I am concerned the fact that we really don't know at this late stage where Brexit is going to land. But we have, again, right across government, all government departments, been engaged in an active contingency plan. And we have our contingency plan ready, no matter what's going to happen. But we don't at this stage know whether we're going to have a no-deal Brexit, which, of course, would be a catastrophe, whether we're going to have a hard border Brexit, or if we're going to have to be have what people described as a soft Brexit. But we are prepared for all contingencies. But we're absolutely certain in our resolve that there will not be a reintroduction of a hard border on the island of Ireland. And we have been explaining this to our EU colleagues since the day after the British voted back 3 years ago. And that's because of the peace process. It's because we need to maintain the climate of stability and peace that we all have been working for since the signing of the historic Good Friday Agreement back in 1998. It's an unfinished job. It's an incomplete process. But the peace process needs to be maintained. And the peace process trumps everything else in the context of the withdrawal of the UK from the European Union. And I have to say that our EU colleagues right across Europe have accepted that. And I want to also want to acknowledge that in all of her statements, the British Prime Minister Theresa May has said that she doesn't want to see the return of a hard border between Ireland and Northern Ireland. We accept her at her word, mm-hmm. but what we have to do now is to ensure that whatever shape the no deal the final deal actually takes, that it will be supportive of our peace process, and that there will be no introduction of any form of border infrastructure across the island of Ireland. That would be entirely and wholly unacceptable.
Yes. You know, you have served in senior government cabinet positions for most of your political career. From our end, and I'm sure around the world, and many people will say, well, if British Prime Minister Theresa May and if the European Union would indicate, and you would know, you worked hard enough in that for many year to keep that, to keep a good relationship there. And if the Irish government really, and only many would, maybe our memories are failing us, but the Irish government have really been an integral part of any negotiations, if everybody seems to say, no, we can't have a return of the hard border, we can't have it. And now we're at, you know, we're the closing bell is about to ring. Where is the, let's call it a weakness, it's some of that fear, and in particular, Northern Ireland, is that getting lost in the overall wrap-up of the agreement?
No, I'm very pleased in the course of the negotiations and the agreement. And this is something that Leo Varadkar, our Prime Minister, our Taoiseach, was very anxious to ensure would be the case always throughout the negotiations, that the Irish peace process would be central. So from the very beginning, we have been influencing our EU colleagues as to the unique circumstances on Ireland, on the island of Ireland, the need to preserve our peace process. And as we come now to the finer stages, we need to commit what we have agreed to writing.
Yeah.
We had an agreement between the UK government and EU 27. Ireland is not negotiating with Britain. Ireland is firmly on the side of EU 27, the 27 remaining EU states, and we are all agreed that the peace process is central. Theresa May herself and her colleagues have agreed that she will do nothing that will adversely impact on the fragile peace. But what we haven't been able to do as yet is to commit that deal to writing, because she hasn't been able to get her deal over the line. She hasn't been able to convince her parliamentary colleagues to do so.
And she is between a rock and a hard place in terms of...
Well, it's been very difficult for her, I accept that. But one of the difficulties from our perspective, and by our, I mean the European Union and the remaining states, because Ireland is not leaving Europe under any circumstances, but we don't know precisely what the British Parliament, or indeed what Theresa May actually wants now. And of course, before any withdrawal agreement can be completed, we want to know actually the terms and conditions. So this is something that currently Britain and her politicians are working out. It's taking a bit of time. It's not terribly clear, but the onus is on the British government to actually inform Europe as to what they are going to do.
Economic, political, and of course in investment in Northern Ireland, one might assume that would have moved to the slow lane as the details and as the timeline for Brexit was moving along. Companies, well, let's wait, see how this shakes out first. That's actually the opposite is true.
One of the reasons I'm here is to promote Ireland as a destination for business. We very much acknowledge the foreign direct investment, particularly from New York and the US in Ireland, employing over 150,000 people. But it's not a one-way street. Mm-hmm. This is a two-way street, and I'm very proud to sit here in New York and say that there are hundreds of Irish companies based here in the United States of America employing up to 100,000 people. So this two-way street, again, underlines the unique relationship between Ireland and the United States. Yeah. As a government minister, I very much acknowledge that, and I'm very keen to ensure that we can build on that. Another of the reasons I'm here in New York, engaging with business, commerce, trade and industry, in order to ensure that we can provide the best for our people, both here and at home in Ireland.
A point that I think gets lost, and most of it is because the image, you know, of Ireland and its contribution to America, again, does sometimes leave the impression of, yeah, well, that's a one-way street, the Irish, you know, they've always come for a better life and whatever. But that is a reality, that you're not coming to the United States, you know, saying, could you ever, you know, think warmly of us, when in fact Ireland is again an Irish companies through thick and thin are you know, providing almost as many, you know, jobs and economic stability as in vice versa. It's not only a good point, but it's a point that sometimes gets lost.
I'm coming to say thanks for the very unique relationship between New York City and Ireland. I'm coming to say that Ireland is very much open for business. I'm coming to say that we have recovered from our acute economic crisis. Ireland now are leaders in Europe in terms of economic growth. And of course, with the UK gone from the European Union, Ireland will be the only English-speaking country within the European Union. And that again provides opportunity in terms of Ireland being a bridge to all the European countries that comprise the European Union. We won't be leaving, we're staying, and we will continue to be influential partners on the other side of the Atlantic, acting as a bridge between the United States and the continent of Europe.
Minister Charlie Flanagan, there are of course many opportunities that in visits, including your own here, while we think of all the merriment and the 258 years later, 16 years older than the Constitution itself, the formation of the government of the United States, that there is a sense that Ireland in its, and we should point out that the turnaround did in fact, when the Celtic Tiger took a tumble, that it was the Irish government and the role of your party, you know, that brought things around to stability. One would have to wonder at what point. Just take a look at some of the areas of huge progress. It seems like a never-ending escalation of numbers to Ireland for tourism. We couldn't even imagine that that would, you know, happen.
We offer a great product, and it's not only for Irish people and their relatives, but I notice many American people coming to Ireland who have no connection with Ireland, and we offer a really good product in terms of, for example, the Wild Atlantic Way, Ireland's Ancient East, which includes my own Midlands area of the counties of Leash and Offaly, the great cities of Dublin, Cork, Galway, and indeed tourists going to Northern Ireland as well because of the peace and stability. So yes, Ireland has become one of the top destinations for international travel, leisure and tourism. People like to come to Ireland for our food, for our fresh air, and of course for our music and dance and culture. And I've seen that in really good shape here in New York over the last couple of days. And I want to compliment all of the Irish community here and their leaders, many of them volunteers, who work on ensuring the success of parades. People who ensure that Irish music and culture and dance is as vibrant here in the USA as it is at home. And I want to say thanks.
The US launch of the American Chamber of Commerce in Ireland, the annual report again shows that that's very successful.
More and more companies from Ireland trading here in New York and across the states, record figures in terms of trade and investment. It's the two-way street that we spoke about earlier. I believe it's very important, and I also believe that there are great opportunities to further enhance and develop relations in terms of trade and commerce and industry.
Minister, have you found that, of course, as you have given keynote addresses that, well, since you've come here, that really it's not so much the threat of Brexit, but it is difficult for us to understand you know, the implications, you know, of Brexit. And you've made a reference to, you know, you're being totally prepared either way for the government to be ready. Now, that is not something that just popped up, you know, over the last year. You have, in fact, and your government has had a constant build-up to the possibility, even when it looked like that might have been overkill, sure, that could never, you know, Brexit pulling out or affecting Ireland to the point where, you know, there would be where there would be disaster.
Well, it's almost it's almost 3 years since the vote in June of 16. We were on the phones and we were flying to every European capital, both myself, Enda Kenny, and Leo Varadkar, who succeeded him, very keen to ensure that we were prepared. We are prepared. And of course, while we have been looking at the negative and the potential adverse impact, there's also an element of opportunity, as I have been saying. We will be remaining firmly as a gateway to Europe, and also opportunity in the financial services, in banking, in legal services, where we can offer an advanced economy for people wishing to do business in Ireland with the appropriate infrastructure. Ireland being a nice place to invest, a nice place to work, and a nice place to live.
And a gateway to Europe, let's not forget. That's what it is. Can I ask you about your role as Minister for Justice, Equality, and what actually your own experience, obviously, as Minister for Foreign Affairs? What are the salient points of what Ireland has to offer in terms of, again, going through the turmoil of an economy that bombed and returned. How is that related to your portfolio?
Well, my primary focus as Minister for Justice is the protection of the Irish people from harm. And in that regard, I'm very keen to ensure that we have a low level of crime. And one of my engagements here this week is to meet with the Chief of Police, James O'Neill. I also note that our recently appointed Garda Commissioner, our Chief of Police, Drew Harris, is out here as well. We want to ensure that we employ every opportunity to keep crime rates low, whether it's organized crime, whether it's people trafficking, whether it's cracking down on gangs, knife crime, gun crime. I'm very keen to ensure that we can have an opportunity of seeing the manner in which crime is tackled here in New York City, exchange of views with senior police men and women, because the protection of society from harm is the fundamental objective of any Minister for Justice. So as well as my economic and political contacts here, I've also availed of the opportunity of dealing with some justice issues, which for me at home is of course my priority.
You in your previous roles, and indeed when you undertook your new mission as Minister for Justice, we are losing Charlie Flanagan at a time when we were making great progress in terms of reversing the immigration trends that for decades has been nothing to brag about. And even if you go back to my days, it did. And I came here in 1959. It was assumed that most family members growing up in Ireland were being grown for export. And in fact, we had that fear again as when the economy tumbled in Ireland.
We've managed to turn that around, acknowledging that for centuries, Irish immigrants have settled in every corner of the world, but particularly along the east coast of the United States. In more recent times, we are now a country of net immigration. And more people coming into Ireland, many of them coming back to Ireland, exceeding the numbers who are actually leaving our shores. I acknowledge, however, that there is an issue of Irish whose status along the East Coast has not yet been regularized. Mm-hmm. We continue to work with the administration in Washington on that. In fact, Leo Varadkar for the first time has appointed a special envoy, John DC, the Waterford TD, mm-hmm. who's been here in New York. And my message to John DC when I return will be that he needs to ensure that every effort is made to deal with this issue. Of course, it's an issue primarily for the United States, exclusively for the United States. But we have a responsibility to our people at home and abroad. And John Deasy and Leo Varadkar and all our ministers will continue to ensure that this issue remains high on the political agenda here in the US, acknowledging, of course, the configuration of those elected on Capitol Hill.
I'd like to remind our listeners too that the Irish government indeed has more than a passing interest in the diaspora, and particularly here in the United States, where the level of cooperation and support that comes from the island of Ireland, that is something that is necessary. It is something that for many decades people were of the opinion that, for once you got rid of people from Ireland, they went to, the corners of the earth. Well, God bless them. I'm sure they'll do very well. Thank you. You have not, the Irish government does not just participate even to the smallest level on that?
Yeah, well, we're very keen to ensure that the job of looking after our diaspora abroad is one for every government minister. I'm here as Minister for Justice, but I'm also here as a member of government that very much acknowledges the work that Irish people do in this great city of New York, the connectivity and the bonds of friendship and kinship and family between Ireland and America, that these continue and that these endure no matter what the extent of our problems at home.
Your financial support is very well recognised, but also I think that the levelling would be appropriate on this trip and indeed in the St. Patrick's season. It would be appropriate to mention the huge support that the Irish government provides through consulates, through the embassy. We're particularly lucky here and partial in heaping praise on our current Consul General, Kieran Madden, but right across the United States. That is, it's not just, the consulates are not just there, to handle crisis, that they're for a lot of other things.
You're right, Adrian. One of the most important positions in our entire diplomatic service is the position of Consul General here in the city of New York, and that's why we sent one of our top diplomats, Kieran Madden, to New York, his team, led by him, and the Deputy Consul, Emer Friel, ensuring that Ireland's door is firmly open. They represent us on a daily basis here in the city of New York. And my advice to anybody who wishes to engage with Ireland, question, query, the Irish consulate is open to deal with these issues. And I have to say the number of people who I've met over the last few days who acknowledge very much the role of the consulate here in New York, and that's a message that I'd be bringing home, and it's a message of comfort.
And it's also, I'm sure that many of our listeners across the United States would know of the tremendous influence and promotion of culture and heritage, through Dan Mulhall, Ireland's ambassador, to the United States.
Yeah. Again, to stress on the importance of the St. Patrick's Day festivities, where we reflect on what it means to be Irish, and our music, our culture, our dance. It's a great source of pride for me to see so many young Irish people actively engaged in our great traditions. And also, can I express my appreciation to the first responders here? Again, absolutely. Many of them in the parade. The fire officers, the men and women of the NYPD, their courage on a 24/7 basis, and to see on the roll of honour so many Irish names. And I want to acknowledge the great contribution of Ireland to the first responders here in New York and thank them for the work that they do protecting everybody here in this city, including the very large Irish contingent.
The significance, and perhaps you can spell it out for us, of the bilateral meetings that you've had on something that hasn't quite surfaced here yet in terms of the significance of Ireland's candidature for a non-permanent seat on the UN Security Council, which is battling down. When this was introduced first, you said, okay, that's a long time off. But actually, we're talking very quickly. What is and what does that role actually mean for Ireland?
Yeah, Irish people are very proud of their role in the United Nations. We're a neutral country. What we do best is promote the objectives and be a voice for small nations. We've been actively engaged in the UN now for over 60 years.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, the blue helmet of our peacekeepers is as well known in the UN as our gold harp. That said, we are a candidate for membership of the Security Council in 21-22, and I've had a number of meetings here too, acknowledging the role of Ireland in the UN, and I look forward to Ireland playing an even greater part in the United Nations in years to come.
And this is definitely something that both of us could suffer for, Minister, if we don't mention that cousin of ours who was Grand Marshal of the St. Patrick's Day Parade. Could you please say a word there? Because, see, you might get away with it, but I got to stay here.
I was really honoured, actually, to represent Ireland this year at the Great Parade here in New York, where the Grand Marshal was my friend Brian O'Dwyer. And Brian O'Dwyer and his family before him have really done Trojan work in ensuring that the links and the bonds between Ireland and New York are maintained and enhanced and developed. His voluntary work throughout many communities, his leadership going far beyond the legal advice that his great firm here in New York provides for many Irish people. So I want to acknowledge the role of Brian. It was a proud moment for me to walk with him in his capacity as Grand Marshal, and I know that it was a great moment of proud, a great proud moment across Mayo and beyond, when they heard that Brian O'Dwyer was the Grand Marshal of this parade, as indeed his father Paul was, and his uncle in years gone by.
Thank you for joining us, Minister.
Thank you, Adrian.
Irish Radio Network, USA.